You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to be with you. Steve Nichols going to stop by in just a little bit. Carabao Cup between Liverpool and Arsenal. Julian Laurent and Gab Marcotti will stop by as well as we go over the Champions League group phase draw. But let's start in Spain. Barcelona 3-0 winners over Celta Vigo. For more, we're joined by Ale Moreno and Frank LaBeouf. Ale, I'll start with you. Celta is usually a pretty uncomfortable place for Barcelona to go. Today, they turn in a comfortable performance, and they do it playing a man down for almost 45 minutes. Pretty good stuff, no?
Very good from Barcelona, actually. And before the red card, there was no doubt as to who was going to win this game. Barcelona scores the early goal by Ansu Fati, who again takes his opportunity so very well, takes a touch around the defender and then finishes with the outside of his right foot. Classy finish by him, mature finish by him. And then it just felt like it was only a matter of time for Barcelona to score a second and a third. Now the red card happens and you think, you know, these are the moments in which Barcelona in the past has looked a little vulnerable. This is their moments in which they haven't responded all that well. Certainly, as you just mentioned, away in Balaidos at Celta de Vigo, where it hasn't been comfortable for them to the point to where they hadn't won there in 5 years. And so you felt like maybe they're in trouble, and they were not in trouble, not at all. I thought that tactically they show that they can be a disciplined team. They went from that 4-2-3-1 to two lines of four. We're going to defend well and then just have Messi float in front of us. And I also think it was important to see the thought process and the substitution pattern from Ronald Koeman and saying, okay, who are we going to sacrifice? In years past, it may have been an easy choice. It may have been Coutinho that you may have sacrificed. Now, not so much, because Coutinho, since he has rejoined Barcelona, has actually played pretty well. Played well against Villarreal, again played well tonight. He stays on the field, and the one that was sacrificed was Antoine Griezmann. So you're trusting Ansu Fati to tactically do the job for you defensively and for Coutinho to keep the ball for you in terms of possession. I thought Barcelona, again, in the second half, were very good with that possession of the ball, even with a man down. And Lionel Messi, who had a quiet first half, second half, more dynamic, more explosive, more impactful, and in the end, Barcelona wins a game 3-0 that could have been uncomfortable, but was not. Impressive from Barcelona.
Frank, not only were they down a man for most of this match, they also had to play in horrible rain. This was a tough performance from Barcelona, not something that we have called Barcelona quite a bit. What'd you take away from the match?
I think it was a very serious and professional performance. They've been quite fortunate as well, on top of being very good, is that in the second half they played with the wind. The wind was blowing towards the goalkeeper of Celta Vigo, which is a good plus, because it would have been a different game, you know, if Celta Vigo would have the win with. So, but overall, you know, as Ali said, you know, everything was perfect. The way they played, the way they defended, the way they act, you know, against Celta Vigo, the way they thought about the game, the changes, the substitutions from Koeman when they went down to 10 men, and Griezmann was the right choice because he wasn't the best from far to the Barcelona attack, and it was just fair to keep Coutinho on because he was the best player, and Ansu Fati because he just scored a goal and showed good qualities at front. Nothing much to say except that I'm disappointed by Celta Vigo. When you play at home 11 against 10, you should show more, even against Barcelona, even if you think that they're better. I mean, the aggressiveness wasn't there, and they let Barcelona being very, very comfortable, especially with Sergio and De Jong, with no pressure whatsoever. So it's a normal result and a very good performance from Barcelona.
Ale, everything perfect, unless your name is Antoine Griezmann. As you both have mentioned, he's the one that gets sacrificed when Barcelona goes down a man, and that came after 45 pretty quiet minutes. What'd you make of his performance today, Ale?
Yeah, and it goes back to last season. It goes back to him trying to figure out what he is in this team. And when Ronald Koeman takes over, one of the first things that Koeman addresses, it's going to be great to see Antoine Griezmann playing his position. Well, I don't even know what Antoine Griezmann's position is anymore because, well, now you have Messi playing in a more advanced role. Coutinho is the one that is taking more of the inside position. And then Griezmann is on the right-hand side. And what you see from Griezmann is that he is the guy that balances everything else off. Essentially, what that means is when Messi moves, he has to move. When Coutinho moves, also Griezmann has to move. And he sort of takes the position that whatever Coutinho left behind or whatever Messi left behind. But it's never Antoine Griezmann the one that initiates the movement. It's never him the one that actually impacts the game, that changes the game. He is the one that is providing balance, providing cover, tactical discipline. But that's not why you invested the sort of money that you did on a player of such a caliber. You want this guy to get the ball in the final third, to create chances for you, to be on the end of chances, to beat people in one-on-one situations, to find a pass, to float around, to rotate. You see him rotating, but you see him rotating to take better defensive positions, not to take better offensive positions.
Frank, Koeman has said that Griezmann has a pretty clear and obvious position. He wants to see him there, and yet when you see him play, it's pretty clear they still don't have the fit for him, do they?
Yeah, they don't. And I'm very worried about Griezmann's future in Barcelona because I don't see him getting into confidence when he plays. The evidence of that is there is a fantastic action on the first half. And when Griezmann gets the final ball, when he has to make a control and he tries the outside of his left foot and misses the control, where it would have been a fantastic goal. And Griezmann in Atletico Madrid would have never missed that kind of control. It says a lot about this lack of confidence that he has. And I agree with Ali. I mean, he doesn't know where to go. He composes with other movements, with Messi movements or Coutinho movements. He's not helped by Sergio Roberto. I mean, you can see that on the left side with Alba, Coutinho and Ansu Fati, it goes very well. It's very fluid and everything goes right. Where on the right side and the opposite side, Sergio Roberto is not as offensive than Alba. Sergio Busquets has a tendency to look for Messi, as Frankie de Jong, and Griezmann is nowhere near it. So we don't know what to do with him. So I don't know if he's still this position. I don't think Griezmann should play on any side. It should be Messi and Griezmann maybe at front. But now, because you have the emergence of Coutinho being so good, you have to compose with that. So it means, again, before Suarez had to play with Messi, now Coutinho has to play with Messi. So maybe Griezmann shouldn't play.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Plenty more from Frank and Ale on today's edition of ESPN FC Extra Time. Stevie joins us to tell us all about his now world-famous hole-in-one shot.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether in its audio or visual format, do not miss a single episode of The Gab and Jewel Show. The latest episode just published on Thursday features Mark Ogden in what can best be described as an uplifting review of Manchester United's transfer work. A slight bit of an exaggeration there. Great to be joined by the two stars of the show, Gab Marcotti, Julian Laurent. Gentlemen, I know you recorded today's episode just before the Champions League draw came out, so let's take a look at the groups and maybe pick apart some of the headlines here. We'll start in Group A, Bayern and Atleti, the headliners there. Real Madrid and Inter very much the same in Group B. Manchester City, kind of the clear favorites in Group C, as are Liverpool in Group D, but things could get very interesting there with Ajax and Atalanta. Chelsea and Sevilla, the headliners in Group E. Wide open Group F, Zenit, Dortmund, Lazio. Group G, Messi versus Ronaldo, Juventus and Barcelona. And then what many are hailing as the group of death, PSG, Manchester United, Leipzig, and Başakşehir of Istanbul down there in Group H. All right, guys, let's start with what every broadcast executive is probably surely salivating at. We got Messi and we got Ronaldo in the group phase. Look, it's great for everybody. It's great for the neutral gab. It also feels like maybe one of the last times we're going to see these two in this format anyway in their prime.
It is. And I mean, I think that is the one overarching message here. You know, these two guys have defined the last, 10 to 15 years in global football. And, you know, at some point, this is going to end. And they're still doing it today. And so, you know, you kind of get a sense that, you know, every minute that they're on the pitch, every time you see them step on the pitch, I'm not suggesting it's going to be their last time, but it could be the last time that they are as good as they are now. So grab your popcorn, clear space in your diary, and sit down to watch this, because, you know, this has been probably the greatest rivalry, or the most defining rivalry between sort of number one and number 1A in the history of football, maybe in the history of sports. And so, there's no question that is the main plot. Obviously, there's subplots, both Juve and Barcelona, with new managers, both of them with a lot of question marks, both of them exchanging players over the summer. But really, it is about those two.
Jules, it seems pretty likely Barcelona and Juventus will go through. Who do you suppose, though, is the favorite in the group between the two sides based on what we've seen so far this season?
I think it's hard because the form that we've seen so far, I don't think would make any sense when they both play each other, even in, I don't know, let's say 5 weeks' time, for example, after the international break. Things could get better. They should get better for Juventus with Pirlo putting all his ideas in place. Same with Ronald Koeman. They might have new players. Or there's a lot of things that can happen between now and when they face each other. I just think I agree with Gab was saying. And also, I think there will be no pressure, really, because they're going to smash Dynamo Kiev and Ferencváros. So let's enjoy that game with no tension, no pressure. Let them do their thing. Let them enjoy that encounter as well, because all the time that we've put them against each other, now they're really against each other in the sense of, like, this is a group stage you're both going to go through. Let's have fun and make the best win.
All right, turning our attention to Group H is where we find Manchester United. If you go off online, off Twitter Gab, Manchester United fans are very, very nervous. Should the manager, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, be nervous about getting out of this group?
Well, first and foremost, you should be nervous about what's going to happen in the last hours of the transfer window, which, of course, shuts on Monday. And I think they still have some business they'd like to get done. But once he gets beyond that, I don't know if worry is the right word, but he's undoubtedly going to be very aware that Paris Saint-Germain and Leipzig, for different reasons, these teams earned their Champions League stripes last year. They showed what they could do in getting to the final and semifinal. They're not going to be at all intimidated in this context. And while Leipzig lost Timo Werner, I think if it's not Sorloth, I think they can beat you with other ways. And of course, Paris Saint-Germain, you're still talking Neymar, you're still talking Kylian Mbappe, and you're talking a lot of confidence. So yeah, I think he should be worried and respectful.
Jules, 4 days left in the transfer window. If United don't make a move, how confident are you in that they can get out of this group?
Even if they make a move, even if they sign Alex Telles, for example, at left back, I'm still not sure if they will go through that group stage, because I think Leipzig is a very dangerous team. I think it's a very tricky draw for United. We will see tomorrow on Friday the scheduling and the fixture list and when they play who and where, and then maybe we'll have a better idea. But it's a very difficult draw, I think, for them for the top two finishes, because I think PSG will finish first of the group, and then it will be between Leipzig and them. And right now, I think Leipzig have a lot more momentum than United have.
Group D definitely does not stand for defense as we look at it. Liverpool, Ajax, Atalanta, Michelin out of Denmark. Gab, this is one certainly for the neutrals, isn't it?
Yeah, I think this is one for the purists, the ones who love a certain brand of football. Ajax, maybe not what they were 2 years ago. Obviously, everybody's left. And I think even in terms of spirit and attitude, you know, they're still trying to get that back. But obviously, tremendous when they unfold going forward. Atalanta, I think, you know, they are now established already. They showed the first two games this season. And I wouldn't I wouldn't discount Michelin either, who, you know, maybe their first time at the rodeo, but they are a very attacking team that plays by very attacking principles as well. So I think this is the group where you generally take the over.
I think a lot of people will be taking Liverpool between Ajax and Atalanta, Jules. You got to lean?
I'll go for Atalanta. I think they, again, the momentum from last season, the way they've started this season already, the fact that Ilicic will come back, the fact that they, you know, they still have, that they've got that confidence. It's a system that they know so well, and they were going to be devastating. And I love Ajax. I just think that this Atalanta team is more talented.
One more group to focus on then, that is Group B, where we find Real Madrid and Inter. They're in there with Shakhtar and Gladbach. Any threat there to either of those two teams, Gab?
Oh, I think definitely. Definitely. I mean, it's not just the fact that obviously, you know, Zinedine Zidane still trying to square things tactically, what he wants to do at Real Madrid. But Gladbach, Marco Rose, you don't know what you're going to get. Really, really interesting manager. He showed it last year. They're a very difficult team to play against. They have that Salzburg Red Bull pedigree, and obviously the likes of Thuram and play up front. And as far as Shakhtar Donetsk, you know, you just go back in recent history. Managers may change, things may come and go, but they have a tremendous record in this competition. They've reached the knockout rounds on several occasions. And this is, I think for me, this is one of the two tightest groups out of all of them.
Jules, Real Madrid can't score. Inter can't really defend. Things could get interesting here, yeah?
I think it would be fascinating. For me, that's the group. D is great because of football and the way they're going to attack and everything. But this one is fascinating because I can see Gladbach going through. You can see Shakhtar going through. You can see Real Madrid and you can see Inter going through, all of them. And there's a lot of little stories. Eden Hazard meeting Conte again. You know, there's so much going on in that group. And I think it would be quite on the edge. I can't see one of those four teams winning all their games, for example. I think it would be quite tight.
Guys, one more bit of news from today then to go over. Robert Lewandowski, surprise, surprise, UEFA's Player of the Year. Gab, that's not the surprise. The surprise is that, as far as the voting goes, he accumulated more points than guys 2 through 10 combined, a testament to the dominant season Lewandowski had.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you have a team that's so dominant the way Bayern were in winning the treble, a lot of times, you know, you see people voting for different players on the team. Maybe one guy goes for Müller, maybe Kimmich. You know, we saw that a bit with Liverpool last year in the Player of the Year voting, where you had 3 or 4 candidates. But so I think it's definitely interesting, and for me, unexpected that all those people wanted to reward Bayern, they all seem to coalesce around Lewandowski. I think quite clearly it's to do with his scoring exploits in the Champions League in particular.
Jules, just goes to show, who needs the Ballon d'Or when you've got the Player of the Year from UEFA, yeah?
Yeah, I think Lewandowski would have loved as well the Ballon d'Or on the mantelpiece, just next to each other, you know?
Absolutely. All right, let's take a list. Look at the list of other players who have earned some hardware from UEFA this year. Start on the men's side, and pretty much a clean sweep for Bayern Munich. No surprise there. Your manager of the year, Hansi Flick. Your goalie of the year, Manuel Neuer. Kimmich in there as your defender of the year. Kevin De Bruyne breaking up the party as your midfielder of the year. Oh, by the way, Lewandowski, as if not enough, also your forward of the year. On the ladies' side, Pernilla Harder wins both player and forward of the year from Chelsea. Jennifer Marajan, your midfielder of the year, Wendy Renard. Your defender of the year, Sarah Bouadi, helping out that Lyon sweep as your goalie of the year.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Liverpool-Arsenal, very much the marquee matchup as far as Monday's Carabao Cup showdowns were concerned. 90 minutes, scoreless. They went to penalties. Arsenal winning 5-4. For more, we welcome back Frank Leboeuf. We welcome in Steve Nichols. Steve, what'd you make of the match? Arsenal deserving winners, obviously went with a much closer to full strength lineup than Liverpool did.
No, Arsenal weren't deserved winners at all. You know, basically this was almost two reserve sides. Both Liverpool and Arsenal had two or three players that would have started in a what we might call a proper game. But the game itself ended up being a battle of the two goalkeepers. And Bert Leno came out over Adrian with a 5-2 win. You know, Bert Leno on five occasions made great saves for shots that were goal-bound. And Adrian made two. So that's why we ended up going to penalties. And then, of course, again, it was a battle of the goalkeepers. And Bert Leno came out on top again. So that's why Arsenal are through, because they were better at penalty kicks. They certainly weren't better than Liverpool during the game. It wasn't the greatest of games, but there were some chances, as I've said, because the goalkeepers obviously had to produce what they did. And Arsenal go through, but not deservedly.
Frank, we've seen Liverpool and Arsenal quite a bit over the last few weeks, and usually it's been a pretty good, pretty wide open match. Today, that was not the case.
No, I didn't enjoy the game. I mean, I agree with Stevie. I think Liverpool should have gone through, but nobody will remember the consistency of the game. They will remember the result and the fact that Arsenal and the Gunners went through and will play the other round. But I was watching at the same time, working hard for ESPN, the first half of Barcelona, Celta Vigo Barcelona, and therefore, and so Liverpool Arsenal. And I was quite bored. I mean, the lack of good passes, the lack of technique, especially, were shown during that game. Not necessarily every time from the youth player, but also from the experienced one. It wasn't a great game. It wasn't a pretty game to watch. Arsenal did what they had to do. And again, as Stevie said, you know, fortunately, Leno was at its best, and he deserved to go through. I don't know if his teammates did, but I think Leno did everything to go through.
Stevie, yeah. Van Dijk and Mo Salah really the only two full-time starters that got the start today for Liverpool. Maybe an insight into how much this means to Jurgen Klopp and company. Are you disappointed at all that they're out of the League Cup, or is this actually better for a Liverpool team that needs to open up its schedule?
I don't think it is. It was the first thing I was thinking about. You know, I'm saying to myself, well, you know, when you only put two or three of your starters out, is it really worth it? But then actually it is, because it's an opportunity to get players time on the field. You know, another couple of signings for Liverpool in this window, and the squad's getting bigger and better. And so, you know, to be able to push who's ever in the starting 11, you need to produce something on the field. And it's going to be difficult. I think they've got, what, the FA Cup is the only thing left. It's going to be difficult for those players, even the likes of Diogo, who looked good in his debut at the weekend. It's going to find it hard to get game time, and that means that their fitness and their sharpness is going to be affected. So yes, at the end of the day, I think it would have been better for Liverpool to go through for that reason alone, and also the young players would get more experience as well.
Thanks, gentlemen. Carabao Cup then moves to the quarterfinal round. Draw is set. We'll get Stoke City against Spurs, Brentford, Newcastle, Arsenal, Manchester City, and Everton, Manchester United. Those matches start the week of December 21st.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
It's really happening. Sergiño Dest to Barcelona. The 19-year-old American bought for 21 million euros plus add-ons from Ajax. How about this? His buyout cost, 400 million euros. He'll wear the number two for Barcelona. Here's what Dest had to say just after his unveiling.
It's so awesome. It's an honor to play for this club. It's the most beautiful club in the world, and it's a dream come true. Because this is like a dream for everybody. Everybody wants to play for Barca, you know. And for me, like, I'm 19, but you know, like, I just want the challenge. I want to get the challenge and play for this beautiful team and play with the best players of the world. First, I want to, you know, improve myself. I want to get a statement in the team, like, you know, play good, and then I feel more welcome in the team. And then hopefully we will get a lot of prizes, like win the league, Champions League, and everything.
For more perspective on Dest, we welcome in Milan van Donken from the Netherlands. Milan, first things first, give us kind of the Dutch scouting perspective. As you look at Dest and you think about him moving to Barcelona, what are the strengths that allow him to have success there, and what are maybe some areas of weakness he's got to work on to have success at the highest level?
Yeah, good to be in your show. His strengths are definitely his skills. He used to be a winger in the youth academy. So he played right wing, left wing. And later in his career, he's only 19, but when he was 17 or 18, he moved to right back. So he has the skills. He is a winger from his nature. So he can pass, he can run quickly, he can dribble. That are definitely his skills. His weaknesses are, I don't know if he's able to defend at the highest level, which obviously Barcelona is. And mostly his tactical cleverness. He can be a bit wild. He can run up front when it's not needed to run up front, or he can run up front when the other defenders want him to stay in the defense. So he can be wild, and he can be tactically a bit not the smartest guy on the pitch. So that are definitely things he needs to work on. But he has the skills. He has the speed, all those kind of things that are quite good with Dest.
Milan, you're worried about his tactics and his defending. I'll remind you, Barcelona's had some issues in those categories, 8-2 against Bayern Munich. There were other clubs interested, PSG, Bayern Munich, just to name a few. Is Barcelona the right move for him?
I don't know. I think for him personally it is, because Semedo left and there's no big player at right back at Barcelona at the moment. So I think his amount of playing time will be bigger than at Barcelona, where you have Pavard and maybe Kimmich as well. But from a Barcelona point of view, I think Koeman knows. He's a Dutch coach. He knows them quite good. So he will probably work on his tactical smartness and cleverness. So I think he can really make big improvements on that. But for Barcelona, I think it can be quite risky to play loads of matches now with Dest in the starting 11. But we'll see.
I wonder what's been the reaction around Ajax. This is a player they got relatively, you know, in the current market, big money for, who 18 months ago was a no-name. Nobody heard of him. He was squad depth. They must be pretty happy about the business done here.
Yeah, it's a strange story. Indeed, as you said, a year ago he made his debut, and we all didn't know him, and he came out of nothing, because in the youth he wasn't a really popular player. He wasn't a big player. He was a really strange guy in the youth. He had some problems with his coaches, and he moved to a satellite club of Ajax. So he never was the big name, and all of a sudden last year he was there, and he was playing really good. But the strange thing as well, now he's a substitute at Ajax. Nusir Mazraoui, who's playing right back now at Ajax, he's better at the moment. So they're selling a substitute to Barcelona for around 20, 25 million, which is a really strange situation. So Ajax is sad because a big talent is leaving the club, but happy at the same time because one of the biggest clubs in the world is paying 20 million for a substitute. So it's a strange situation.
You know, when Ajax went on their famous Champions League run a few years ago, whether it was De Jong or De Ligt, there wasn't a lot of questions as to whether those guys were ready to move on. Dest is 19. He's got less than 40 first-team appearances for Ajax. Are there doubts? Is anybody around Ajax or in Holland maybe doubting that he's going to be the big success at Barcelona?
Yeah, there are definitely doubts. As you said, with De Ligt and De Jong, there were no question marks. But now there are quite a few question marks. And we are also thinking that why Barcelona, they had problems with financial situation. Now they have some money. And the first player you're going to buy is Dest, a right back from Ajax with less than 40 matches, 19 years old. I would have other preferences. But so, we find it quite a strange situation. There probably are going to come more players to Barcelona. But we have some doubts. But we are also enthusiastic at the same time. Enthusiastic because, he's a Dutch talent, although he plays for the USA, which we find quite a sad situation. But it's okay. So we are also excited. But we have some doubts at the same time, which we always have with talents.
Speaking of Ajax in the Champions League, I got to get your reaction to the group that they're in. Liverpool, Atalanta, Michelin from Denmark. Is there any optimism that Ajax is going to get out here, or are people biting their nails already?
There's not a lot of optimism. No. Of course, I don't have to explain the status of Liverpool to you. Neither Atalanta, who smashed Lazio yesterday. There's enthusiasm because there's especially Liverpool, Ajax and Liverpool have two historic clubs. They played in 1966 already against each other in the Champions League. And Atalanta is also a team with a lot of Dutch guys, Hartenboer, De Roon, Gosens, he's both Dutch and German. So that's a nice situation for people in the Netherlands. But there's not a lot of optimism, no. There wasn't a lot of optimism in the 2018-2019 season when Ajax reached the semi-finals. And Ten Hag, the coach, just said at the press conference, I was thinking one moment to the 2019 remarkable Champions League run when Ajax was like seconds away from the final against Liverpool. And he said, now we can see how far we are against such a big team. So that's also a nice kind of thing for the Ajax fans.
Milan, one more thing while we've got you here. I got to get your reaction to Frank de Boer taking over the Dutch national team. I mean, we had him here in Major League Soccer at Atlanta United. He really didn't impress. I don't know who else they asked if they wanted this job, but there wasn't anybody with a better current coaching resume than De Boer available to the Dutch national team.
Yeah, you're quite surprised, right?
Yeah, quite surprised, certainly after the way things ended in Atlanta.
Yeah. I had him as he was a guest in our show 2 weeks ago. He wasn't the national coach by then. And he looked back at his career. He was successful at Ajax. He had 4 championships in 6 years, but his style was really boring. The fans of Ajax, they weren't really happy anymore. It was all the central defenders playing the ball to each other, and that was mostly it. Then he moved to Inter, which was terrible. Crystal Palace was even more terrible. And Atlanta United, he said in my show, no, it wasn't a success, but it wasn't also really bad. But I heard the reactions in the United States and in Atlanta, and they weren't really positive. So I think that was kind of a failure as well. So 3 failures in a row. It's a strange situation with our national head coach, because most people in the Netherlands wanted Louis van Gaal, which is our famous coach. He was at Manchester United, of course. And he said to the media, I'm ready. I want to do the job. So. But it's a strange situation that our national federation didn't go for Van Gaal, but chose for De Boer. And you should see it in the light of Ronald Koeman, who was the national head coach. And the federation just wants to go further with his what he achieved in the last 2.5 years. And they don't want to change that much. So the whole staff will stay the same, except for the national head coach. And they just replace Koeman by De Boer. And they hope that nothing much will change and that it'll keep on this way, but people in the Netherlands aren't. There's not a lot of enthusiasm about the appointment of Frank de Boer. We'll wait and see.
He's got the job through the World Cup in 2022. You think it'll be a success?
It can be a success because he's got really talented players. With Frankie de Jong, De Ligt, Van Dijk, Van Alden. We have quite a few talented players. And what may be can be a difference. At Ajax, he was quite successful, but then Inter, Crystal Palace, and Atlanta, maybe the language can be an option, can be a difference, because he's not the most like worldwide speaker. And maybe his style works better with Dutch players. He's really grown up in the Ajax school of possession, pressing high, and not really adapting. And Dutch players also grew up with that style. So that can be an advantage for the Boer, that he's able to work with Dutch players with their style, and that the players also know how to work with him. So, and that they can communicate well, not like Frank de Boer did in the past. So it might be a success, but there are definitely some doubts about the appointment of Frank de Boer as coach of the National Federation.
Milan, thanks so much. De Boer's first game in charge will be against the Mexican national team next Wednesday in Amsterdam. You can catch that one 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time start on ESPN2. All right, that'll do it for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks for watching. Coming up, Extra Time with Frank LeBeau, Steve Nichol, and Alejandro Moreno. Enjoy. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. We've got your Twitter questions, and we have quite the trio of panelists awaiting us today. Ale Moreno, Frank LeBeau, Steve Nichol. Gentlemen, great to be with you. Plenty of games that we talked about in today's show. One of them, Liverpool-Arsenal, teams that have met a few times in recent weeks. Frank asked this question: how do you prepare for a game mentally when you played the same opposition multiple times over the past weeks or months, such as Liverpool and Arsenal, who played today for the second time this week? Stevie, you're the manager in the lot. How do you prepare?
Generally it's very difficult because, you know, unless you're a team that plays in two or three different ways, then you pretty much know what you're going to be up against. And generally, well, I say generally, in the old days when of course everybody played the first team in all the competitions, the second game usually became a little bit of a standoff. Everybody was kind of making sure they didn't make any mistakes because they knew exactly what was coming. And so it was usually a bit of a drab affair. But now, it's a little different now. You know, the fact is that there was only two players on what Liverpool's team and three on Arsenal's that would play in a proper game. So that kind of changes that whole preparation. You know, you basically got a bunch of, you know, a mixture of young guys and guys trying to get in the first team who are excited and who actually prepare for it, you know, the way they would a big game. So it's a little different these days.
Ale, I'm thinking back to some of your time in Major League Soccer when there were like only 12 teams and you had to play everybody every other week. Did it ever get boring, ever get tough?
Are you saying that he got boring because I was on the field? Is that what you're suggesting?
Never would have implied that. No. You made it interesting, especially for Stevie Nichol.
Well, I can tell you that in other sports, it's commonplace. So you consider a baseball playoff series or you consider a basketball playoff series and how many times you play the same team over a short period of time. But in our sport, it's not nearly as common and it is uncomfortable. And you want to see different faces and you want to compete against different people. And when you're competing against the same team over and over again, not only do they know you and you know them, but now you're carrying things from the game before. And so maybe a tackle that you didn't care for, maybe something that a player said, maybe the outcome of the game wasn't in your favor. And so to Stevie's point, that second game then becomes about, we're going to get even from whatever happened in the first game rather than concentrating what we need to do in order to win this game. And to me, it was always really just uncomfortable just to be on the field with the same people time and time again, whether they were my teammates or not. It was just uncomfortable to play against the same people.
Guys, UEFA coming out today and announcing their Players of the Year. Does Kevin De Bruyne winning UEFA Midfielder of the Year mean that he's almost as good as Jordan Henderson, who won the Football Writers Footballer of the Year? This from Pearson. Stevie, this seems like the part of the show where I'll mention Jordan Henderson's stats and you'll yell at me.
I mean, what are these awards all about? I mean, seriously. How did Joshua Kimmich get the Best Defender in Europe award? I mean, seriously.
He's not even a defender.
He didn't even play as a defender. So, These awards are complete nonsense. You know, at the end of the day, they come down to personal choice, whether you like goals over defending, whether you like just your own personal choice. So it's a bad argument, is what it is.
Frank, you got any argument with Frank? With Kevin De Bruyne winning the UEFA Midfielder of the Year?
I don't have any argument about Kevin De Bruyne being one of the best players in the world. But again, individual rewards, awards, you know, don't mean anything to me in a collective sport. So, you know, comparing players who play in different positions is completely no sense. So Kevin De Bruyne is a great player. Anderson was a great player and still is a great player. But I don't want to, well, we can compare that because they play almost the same position. But it's stupid to give, again, individual awards in the sport, in the collective sport.
Ale Moreno's diving school with a question for its namesake. Ale, why were so many people questioning if James had the nastiness or bite to play in the Premier League? Surely any South American who plays for his country has to have that. What do you think?
What was the name of the player?
Well, because he had not shown that when it was requested and required from Zinedine Zidane. When they wanted his bite and his nastiness and tactical discipline and defending and sacrifice for the team, he did not come up with that. He did not come up with the goods. There's no question that James Rodriguez is a talented player. And there's no question that when he has played with Colombia, regardless of his struggles at club level, that he has been very good. The talent is there. The mindset wasn't always there at Real Madrid. And so therefore, that's why he ends up at Everton. And so far, so good at Everton. Whether it lasts or not, we'll see. It depends on the confidence level for James Rodriguez and how much Carlo Ancelotti is able to manage the player and the mentality of the player as the season goes on.
Frank, what a choice Andrew has given you for our next question. Virgil van Dijk or Vincent Kompany?
Ooh. 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 I will go for Virgil van Dijk because I'm a real fan of him, and every time I watch him, I feel that when he's really tuned in, the guy is unstoppable. When he's lets go, you know, sometimes, you know, we can feel that he can be surprised. Vincent Kompany had a fantastic career, but I think technically he had some issues comparing to van Dijk. I mean, he was a dog. He never let go. He was a captain. He had a character. I mean, he's a good friend of mine, and I'm really keen of what he did, and I really like the guy. But in terms of football, what I see and what I like in football, I like the elegance of Van Dijk and the performances of Van Dijk.
Of course, Frank goes for the elegance. What fan base do the guys think is the most cringeworthy? Great, let's make some enemies here. Even as an Arsenal fan, all of the Partey and Aouar spam tweeting has me ashamed to be a fan of the club. Ale, who for you are the most cringeworthy fans? I know your mentions are always blown up.
Well, thanks for this question, Seth.
What's a question? Who decided to put this in to ask us?
From the people that make the decision in terms of what questions get asked.
We need villains. We need villains on this show. You know the role.
What was that? I'm sorry.
We need villains, Ale. We need villains on this show.
Well, I have good times, great times with Spurs fans over the years. Actually, they don't seem to enjoy anything that I have to say about Spurs, even when it's positive. But I've also had run-ins into Roma fans over the years as well, because
Roma president,
apparently
the Roma
they
president,
cannot be criticized as a team. And in the end, I honestly, fans get really touchy about their team when you criticize whoever is playing for them at the time.
Stevie, any fan base that particularly gets under your skin? I know you particularly get under the skin of the United fans.
Yeah, I mean, there's definite history there. I can't think of anything good to say about them, to be honest, right now. all the interactions I've ever had in Manchester have been horrendous. So I'll tell you a good one. When we were the Revs with Chicago, there was a There was a probably a family, three or four of them, who used to sit behind the bench and absolutely give me and Paul Mariner dogs abuse. And we were actually 3-1 down in the 90th minute one day, and we came back and drew 3-3. And the two of us, as soon as the whistle went, turned round to them and gave them it back. It was fantastic.
Right. Did not see Chicago Fire getting a mention there, but you never know.
Well, that's good dancing by Stevie. Good dancing.
Yeah.
Good dancing away from actually answering the question.
Sure. Just a few less Fire fans to get mad at him than, you know, Manchester United or Everton or anybody else he could have picked at. Still plenty of love for Chicago Fire. Ale, who are your favorites to qualify for the World Cup out of CONMEBOL?
Venezuela.
Come on.
That's it.
This is it. This is the cycle. This is the cycle, you're saying.
Well, it better be. I mean,
hey,
honestly,
when was the last cycle?
It's going to be Brazil, Argentina, and then a mix of everybody else. And hopefully in that mix is going to be Venezuela. That's what I'm hopeful for. But it's tough. Qualifying in CONMEBOL is tough. And people don't realize it up until you actually participate in that competition. And no game in South America, and I know it's been said a few times, but no game in South America is easy. Everything is a complication, including the travel, and including the weather, and including the arrangements for the teams, and so on and so forth. Hey, Scotland, relax over there, all right? Relax, buddy.
I know it's not San Marino, it's not the Faroe Islands, Stevie. UEFA's real tough. Yeah, no,
hey,
yeah.
You're just
you got to go to Gibraltar, right?
You just need good.
Yeah.
When was the last time the general that generation thing you were talking about, when was the last time you got to the World Cup?
And that would be zero. That's why I'm hopeful that this is the time.
I thought that was it.
Hey, you just worry about advancing in Nations League, Stevie, all right? Go ahead.
That's right. Something glass houses Scotland. Frank, Stevie, among all the non-ex-professional player crew at FC, who do you think would stink the most at taking a penalty kick? Dan, Seb, Gab, Julian, or Sid?
This is easy.
Frank, you go first. Who's the worst penalty kick taker of the non-pros?
I will go for Gab.
Why, pray tell?
I don't know. I saw him, you know, doing the podcast with Shorts. I don't trust the legs.
He's probably the most likely to stop one. Got the biggest frame out of any of the five there. Ale, who do you think?
Oh, it's Gab. It 100% Gab. If you ever seen Gab, well, first of all, he's a really big, tall guy, but he's got the big frame, right? And then the skinny leg. So it's a little bit of SpongeBob SquarePants when it comes to his physique. I have to say, yes, I'm taking Gab. No question about it. 100%. No doubt about it.
Stevie, you want to defend Gab here at all?
No, I was trying to think who could rival him. I guess the closest I could possibly say would be Dan. I mean, I can't imagine Dan kicking a football. These wee spindly, skinny legs. They wouldn't have the strength to reach from 12 yards. But yeah, I'll go with Gab.
How about that? That's how we celebrate Dan Thomas on his 10-year anniversary of working here at ESPN. He tweeted that earlier. Incredible. They'll literally hire anyone and keep you around.
Seb, are you going to make it a 10 years?
You should know.
No, guys, I am not. I'm very, very much an underdog when it comes to that. We'll have to see what the odds makers have there, Ale. Stevie, this is the big news of all week. Describe your hole-in-one shot and then what you did with the ball.
Hey!
One 147 yards. A 7-iron, right-hand side of the green, 2 bounces, a little roll to the left, and in the hole. And I've since lost the ball. I hit it out of bounds the other day.
What?
I didn't even think about keeping it.
Stevie, how long have you been playing golf? And that's your first hole-in-one, right?
Oh, my goodness, aye. Yeah. I've been playing since I was about 8 or 9, so that's what, a good 50 year.
Ale, you
smashed the ball into the woods.
Waiting for. Hey, Stevie, I'm still waiting for my all-in-one. You know, I did three twice on a five, on a par five, but I never had a chance for all-in-one. Right.
Well, since we're all humble bragging about our golf, Ale, you want to get something in here?
Oh, none at all. I did not have a hole-in-one. No, just solid. Just keep it in front of me. There's nothing fantastic or spectacular about my game. Just solid.
You were a
witness. In the end, I add up the numbers and it comes up to a decent score.
You were a witness to Stevie's greatness. What did it look like from your perspective?
Well, so it felt like it was going in. The moment it took a couple of bounces, now we're all yelling, go in, go in, go in. The ball goes in. Frankly, my first reaction was the obvious one. You go and jump on Stevie. And Stevie's just kind of staring at it like, it went in, Stevie. So I'm hugging him. Social distancing was in question a little bit, but, you know, this is a once-in-a-lifetime sort of thing. So I said, the heck with it. I went and hugged Stevie, and then the rest of the group came, and we celebrated, and we made some noise in the tee. That's all I can remember. But it was great to see, and it was great to celebrate with Stevie.
Ali was definitely the most excited out of the lot. It was me, Adrian, and Todd. And Ali was gone mental. I was like, brilliant. He's like, high fiving and like smiling and cuddling me and everything. I was like,
See, I've never seen somebody so uncomfortable with a celebration and an embrace. And I was emotional about it. And this guy's almost like, can we just move on to the next hole? You know, I'm done with this.
It's just not me, Ali. It's just not me.
Mm-hmm. Sebi, we should test those people now. You know, a little PCR, you know, would be accurate. You know,
exactly.
Hey, I like it, Frank. Social responsibility. I'm all about that.
That's right. All right. yesterday, we got to see that Dan's show notes were full of doodles. Really curious to see what's in Sebi's notes from Kartik.
Three different pads.
Yeah, well, we do have many options. We do have many options for your notes, you know. We got a few pads, not just one. I don't limit myself to
No, and there's a third. I know there's a third.
There's a third.
Yes, there it is.
Can anybody read the chicken?
Is that the big yellow one?
No, you know what? I've gone away.
Is that the big yellow one?
I found a bunch of white ones today, so the yellow ones are gone, Stevie. But we'll bring them back. Don't you worry.
Ah.
Don't you worry.
I do have a question. Mark. How come you moved away from... You had your pad. You've always had your pads, but you also had the laptop with you at all times. Mm-hmm. How come you moved away from the laptop?
No, that is a very direct and obvious answer to that, and that is the bullying of one Craig Burley. He called me Laptop Larry one too many times, and the laptop found its way into the black bag and hasn't come out since. What do you know?
See, Stevie? You don't let the bullies win. You got to stand up to the bullies. That means you keep bringing it.
Right.
That's what you do.
That's like when Dan keeps wearing white ankle socks on the show every time Craig shows up. Wonder how that'll go. All right, boys, that's it for this edition of Extra Time. Thanks for joining us. We will be back for tomorrow's show. I'm in the hot seat again, and we will take your questions off Twitter.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.